LBC, good morning. I'm Clive Bull with you till four. Apple revealing technology that it intends to use on US iPhones, which will scan customers' images for child sexual abuse. Do you think this is something to be welcomed, or are you concerned about tech companies checking out what's on your devices, and what else are they already scanning? Fevzi Turkalp, who joins us now, who is the editor of GadgetDetective.com and is on Twitter at GadgetDetective. So good morning, Fevzi.
Good morning.
So explain first of all what Apple's up to then.
Okay, so it's doing a couple of things. There's a new communication safety feature which is coming to iOS and iPadOS, in other words, to iPhones and iPads. That is designed to help protect children when they're messaging using the Messenger app, or the Message app, I should say. That will detect explicit photos either being sent or received to a child and will warn the parents and blur out the picture. And what's interesting about that element of it is that Apple say that end-to-end encryption is still in place, which means that the scanning must be being done on the handsets itself, not whilst it's sort of flying, hurtling across the internet. So quite interesting that they're doing that. Now, the other thing that's caught most of the headlines is scanning photos for child sexual abuse material, or CSAM. Now, what Apple is saying is that when people have got iCloud photos switched on their iPads and iPhones, then before any images go to iCloud, the images will be compared to a database of known images of sexual abuse. So they're not using, well, the basis of it is they're not using a great deal of AI, because they're comparing photos on your device against known images known to be that. So there are numbers called hashes that represent each of those photos, and a hash database, a database of all those known photos, is then secretly downloaded to your phone, takes up space on your phone, takes up processing power of your phone to do this scan and comparison. I guess it's interesting that they've chosen to go after child sexual abuse material, because of course no one in their right mind would feel able to criticize that. But the concern about it, I guess, is that once this infrastructure is in place, once this software is in place and it's all working, what is to stop Apple, perhaps under the pressure, let's say, you know, they want to do business in China, and China says, well, you know, okay, you've got that in place, let's not just send a hash database of child sexual abuse images, let's send a database of images of known felons or political activists. I mean, you see, once the infrastructure is there, you then rely upon the absence of despotic governments, essentially, because a government could make it a legal requirement for other types of images to be scanned for. And these are essentially, let's be clear, these are essentially warrantless searches of your devices.
Yeah, somebody's just texted in saying, it seems like a good idea. Why do they even have to tell us? Why don't they just do it anyway?
Well, interesting, isn't it? And it's also interesting that this is starting being implemented in America initially. And they did say they want to roll it out to other regions. But I do wonder if our GDPR regulations, which Britain still enjoys a protection of because they were enshrined into English law when we left the European Union, I wonder if part of the reason why it's not in other territories yet is because it's actually a legal minefield.
So this is going on actually on your phone. I assumed that it would be maybe checking, scanning what's in your iCloud library, but you're saying this is actually on your device.
Yeah, and it's funny because Apple sell that as being a positive. Oh, we're not scanning your iCloud account. No, we're scanning your handset. To me, that's more intrusive. It may be that they're doing this because people have got the ability to encrypt stuff before it's sent to iCloud, so that's to say scramble it in such a way that even Apple couldn't run these sorts of tests on it easily. They'll be doing it on the handset, and you know, it's really interesting because people are not really able to object because, you know, everyone agrees that such images should not be possessed and shared. But having said that, at the same time, these are warrantless searches, which where it's very simple. All you do is just change the database of images that you're checking for.
Now, how much of our stuff is scanned in some way anyway? I mean, things like emails, for example, and Google documents. Yep. But I'm sure I've read that they do scan that, looking for certain words and things, not for illegal activity necessarily, but just they scan it anyway. Is that right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, Google, the Gmail email accounts, have got some of the best spam filters there. Well, spam filters work by scanning the contents of emails, but Google go a step further than that and scan them for the purposes of providing you with advertisements that are relevant. So if you email someone about going skiing, you may well find adverts about skiing.
Seriously?
Or skiing products. Yeah, so that happens. And, you know, it's kind of I always think, you know, when you buy a smartphone handset or you sign up for a service of this nature, you're pretty much just making the choice about who you want to be able to spy on you, you know. So if you buy an Android phone, you're giving that ability to Google. If you buy an Apple phone, potentially you're giving it to Apple. It's a question of who you trust the most. I personally trust Apple more, not because they're an intrinsically more moral company. One could argue that either way, but just because their business model is not predicated on monetizing the data that we shed as we use their services. Apple's charge a pretty penny for their hardware products and increasingly for their services, and that's how they make their money. And they've made it a feature that they respect our privacy. And this is a careful balance Apple has got to do. And I think that whilst one may trust Apple more than others, you can be sure that once Apple has trodden or blazed this path, actually, that others will follow. Because if you know, the super Apple does it, then it must be all right, you know. And so we are now going down this way, and governments will increasingly demand it. And I just do fear, because we've already got governments leaning on Apple and other technology companies to weaken their encryption, I think it's entirely predictable that they'll lean on them to check against other groups of images.
And I gather that when we say we'll Google it, if you actually do Google it, that's all logged as well, what searching for. And I've just started using an alternative search engine which claims not to be doing that.
DuckDuckGo.
Yes.
It's very good.
Is there a difference?
Yeah, there is. I mean, probably the last 10% of stuff that you need to find that you can't find on DuckDuckGo, you may resort to the likes of Google. But that's exactly what I do. My default search engine is DuckDuckGo because they tell us, and I guess we, you know, may as well believe them, because we know Google certainly do log them, so at least there's a chance that DuckDuckGo or not. DuckDuckGo claim not to log the searches, therefore don't keep them, therefore they're not available to anybody, and moreover, they don't analyse them to learn about us and sell that information about us to third-party data brokers, which is what Google do it. So, you know, Google is not a benevolent organisation, it's a business. What Google is a window in which you put your every thought, desire, query, worry of your life in, and it tells so much about you. Just looking at your Google searches is immensely telling. And the way they encourage you to do that is provide you with the service of search. And the way that they provide you with free email of really high quality is that they get to scan your emails. So, you know, it's just... think of it as spyware with a cherry on top, a reason for you to use it. And that's what it is. It's not free. You're paying for it with your information.
And then the one people always wonder about is whether, okay, this one thing, scanning your emails, are they actually listening to us on those speakers and on any microphones that might be available, or even watching us on a camera?
So the argument has always been that because there are more of us than there are of them, Is it like the problem that the Stasi had in East Germany, that there weren't enough people to follow each of the people, and they said up to one third of the population were following and spying on the other two thirds? now, what's now changed is artificial intelligence allows the machines to do the first level, initially the first level of spying, and because even with Apple system, for example, when that database matches on the electronic system on your handset, then a human being will review it before that user's account is shut down and they are reported to the authorities. So the same thing applies now, because as speech recognition improves, one of the ways in which speech recognition improves is because the machine starts to understand what is being said. When human beings talk to each other, quite a lot of the words are not heard. They're unintelligible. However, we use our understanding of what's being said, and in particular the context, to subconsciously fill in the gaps. We're not even aware that we're doing it. So the reason why speech recognition is getting better is because it starts to understand what we're saying, the content of what we're saying, not just recognizing the words without understanding their meaning. So once that happens, it's completely possible and probable. I mean, obviously, when you speak to a smart speaker, that's exactly what it does. Your smart speaker is not smart. It makes a recording of what you said. It sends that recording to the smart speaker's operator's computers, let's say Amazon, if it's an Echo unit. Amazon analyze the contents of that, not just, you know, what words were spoken, but what was the person actually asking for, and they put together a recording of a reply, they send it, which the dumb speaker then reads out. So that, by definition, means it's listening to what we're saying, trying to understand it and responding appropriately. The question is, what else are they using that for? And I think that the subtext to all of the things that we've discussed so far is the need for a really solid legal framework that defends the rights of citizens, to starts with the premise that we own our own data and that everything flows from that. We should be the central owner, because at the moment the premise is that we don't own our own data due to a bit of archaic case law from a few decades ago in America. And everything flows from that. So as these new services develop and there isn't a protective legal framework in place, unfortunately, we as consumers will suffer.
I've been watching a couple of really good spy thrillers on streaming services recently, and it's really interesting how all of what spies seem to be doing, and these are set in real life, like in Tehran and in the Middle East. And the work of a spy now seems to be entirely about technology, about hacking into somebody's laptop, watching them, reading their stuff, opening up their phone.
Yeah.
Is that all actual real-life stuff then? Can they hack into your phone and spy on you?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and there's been recurrent and recent evidence that even Apple security is no match for the vulnerabilities. So there are companies like, you know, quite high profile now, Israeli companies in particular, that make their living out of procuring information about faults that are not known by other people in Apple's and Google's operating systems, and building tools that allow them to take advantage of those faults, to breach the security of the phone, to take control of it, to change the settings on it, or install covert software on individuals' handsets. Now, this is the equivalent of being an arms dealer. This is a form of weapon. There are concerns that whilst those sorts of companies will tell you that, you know, they only give these tools, or sell their tools, I should say, to people who are after terrorists, there is evidence that actually that various states are using these tools to go after dissidents and journalists.
Just one other thing I wanted to ask you about as well, a story about passwords today. And it's being reported that complicated passwords, this is from GCHQ, complicated passwords with numbers and symbols, you know, the kind of thing that we normally get recommended, should be avoided, they say, because they're daft and easily forgotten. Instead, passwords, they say, should be constructed from three random yet easily memorized words to reduce the risk of being targeted by hackers. What do you think?
I mean, much as I have great respect for the work of GCHQ, I don't completely agree with that, because if you are it sounds great when it's one or two websites, which is of course the problem with passwords at the moment, is that we have to remember in some way, sometimes hundreds of passwords, not just a few. So if those three words are truly random, how will you remember three random words in the right combination for, let's say, 10 different websites? Let's just say 10. It's not going to happen. You're either going to write it down, which is, we advise not to do that, or the words will not be truly random. They may be words from the page of a book or a poem or a nursery rhyme or some such thing, and they cease to be random at that point. They become brute forcible. You know, a computer could go through all known poems and look for those words. So to me, they're probably saying that in the absence of advice about password management software. So for me, that's a better solution, but no solution is perfect. But a password management application will generate a unique password for every website that you access where you need to enter a username and password. So it will be unique and it will be unguessable. And then it will store that in a database, which is then unlocked by a master password. Now, that's the weakness, of course, is that if someone gets into that database, they get all your passwords. But I would say that if you do that, you use a piece of free, most of the, like, 1Password and LastPass have both got free versions. If you do that, then you store all these unique passwords that it remembers. You never have to know those. I mean, it can be a string of 40 alphanumeric digits and special characters and upper and lower case. You don't actually ever have to know it. The point is, once it's stored in the database, when you go to that website again, it automatically fills in the gaps, so you don't actually ever have to remember it. And then what you do is you then protect that master database of passwords with a good password that you must then remember, but also you use second factor authentication, which means it will then require you to use something like an authorization app, or it will send you a text message to your mobile phone. So it will require not just you to remember a password, but also for you to possess something. It can be a fob, it can be an app running on your phone, it can be the access to your phone itself to read the text message. In that way, you get more security and you get a good deal of convenience as you surf the internet. But it's not perfect, but neither is what GCHQ has suggested there.
Well, there we are. Fevzi doesn't agree with GCHQ. I'm sure they're logging that right now. Fevzi, thank you very much indeed. Great to talk to you. That's Fevzi Toekalp, who is on Twitter at Gadget Detective. If you want to pick up on any of those points with Fevzi, thanks very much indeed.